Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, guys. How are you both?
Going well.
Morning,
thanks.
Nick.
Do we find you in Barossa?
Yes, in the heart of the Barossa Valley.
Excellent.
You mentioned Crondorf Lines. Well, Crondorf is actually a village just outside of Tanunda, the main township in the Barossa Valley.
Oh, right.
So it's a wine brand that has real provenance.
And that's the thing, we're just in, you know, sort of doing a little bit of prep for the for this chat. It's amazing, the history, isn't it? Like back to, what, 1857 or something like that?
Yeah, actually 1847. So in 1847, the first Silesian settlers settled the village of Crondorf in the heart of the Barossa. And that was really the sort of start of the whole winemaking journey, I guess, in the Crondorf village. But ultimately that led to the really sort of historic value of the winemaking heritage that we have here in the Barossa Valley today.
Mm. So Silesian back, well, I guess that was some part of what is now Germany or some parts nearby.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was the outers of Germany, included Germany, Poland, those sorts of regions. And ultimately those settlers settled a number of little hamlets in the Barossa, and Crondorf was one of those.
Hmm. It seems to me, Nick, that this is obviously a brand that we've known, you know, over time, you know, in history. Did it sort of fade a little, and then has it been reinvigorated, or is that just me?
No, definitely. So it's a brand that goes way back to certainly the early 70s. In 1980, the Crondorf brand actually was awarded the famous Jimmy Watson Trophy for a 1979 Cabernet Sauvignon. Mm. And that really propelled the brand into the limelight. Ultimately, the brand was sold off then to a bigger corporate, and I guess they didn't give it the love. Yeah, exactly. It got lost in their portfolio of brands, and ultimately, I guess in more recent time, we've been on a journey of reinvigorating the brand, breathing life back into it with new modern contemporary styles of Barossa wine. And, just recently we've managed to have our third annual release of Crondorf wines, and it's a showcase of five wines made from traditional varieties in the Barossa, namely Shiraz and Cabernet Sauvignon. Mm.
And you do a Grenache as well, and that performed well in the Halliday Grenache Challenge, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right. We do a couple of Grenaches and even a Grenache blend, but Crondorf Founders View Grenache actually won the James Halliday Grenache Challenge against 140 other Grenache wines.
And are they Grenache from all over? Like all over
Australia? Yeah, that's right, from all regions across Australia. Obviously, some of the more prominent Grenache wines are sort of embedded into the regions of Barossa and McLaren Vale. But I think this year a Western Australian Grenache actually won the award. So, they do come from every major region across Australia. But so we won that with our 2020 vintage. That's a couple of years ago now, but that wine also went on to take out the National Wine Award at the Canberra Wine Show for the Grenache class as well. So it's done really well for us, and it's been a great wine, I guess, to help propel Crondorf back into significance. Mm.
Stylistically, how do you think about the Grenache, Nick?
Yeah, so I think stylistically, as a winemaking fraternity, we've seen a real resurgence in Grenache in particular. And I think that's come about because winemakers seem to be picking it more at optimum ripeness now. And so instead of picking it super ripe and just making a dry red style of wine, they're picking at optimum, and what we're seeing is this lovely expression of aromatics, you know, lovely blue and red fruits coming through in the wines just by picking when they should be picked and not trying to achieve these higher alcohols and more dry red wines. So
it's interesting.
The Grenache wine can be really expressive and very pretty. And so I think we've seen a real change in how winemakers are sort of, perceiving the whole winemaking process around Grenache.
Yeah, they certainly. I mean, they're lovely. Lovely to drink these days. I remember the early, in the 1990s, drinking Grenache, and I'm thinking, what is this great variety? I didn't even know what it was, but drinking 14.5%, 15% wines that had very, very bitter aftertaste. Couldn't understand why anyone would want to drink them compared to what we get today.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think we're just you know, as a winemaking fraternity, just picking them too ripe. And we're losing that lovely sort of buoyant, lifted aromatic expression that the wines are capable of.
Mm. Nick, we've got the option here for listeners to text in questions. So you have prompted a few questions, so I'm going to have to I'll go through them one at a time. So Christopher asks, is there much debate at the dinner table whether to open a bottle of Krondorf or a bottle of Zed wine?
Ah, okay. So this Chris has a bit of intel on me, obviously.
Right.
My wife's actually a winemaker as well, and she owns a brand called Zed Wine.
There you go.
So we're competing, I guess, in that sense. We're both winemakers, both in the Barossa, and she makes a very good Grenache as well. And there's always a lot of debate. But I think, you know, we look forward to each other's valued input into our wine. So while there's, you know, there's a lot of competitiveness in what we do, we're also very much aligned in sort of how we think and how we react and what we want to do with our wines. So.
Mm. Well, unless she's won the Halliday Grenache Challenge in the last couple of years, you're still ahead with the award, right?
Yeah, that's true. But if you look back at the awards, that award over recent times, she's had a wine that's made the top 10 in the list for several years in a row there at one stage. So consistency is always a good thing as well.
Definitely it is. So the other question, and this is from Kim, given the history of the Krondorf winery within the Crown Village area, how's the winery sourcing Krondorf fruit for its wines?
Yeah, so the Krondorf brand actually has four different vineyards located across the Barossa Valley floor. So we're sourcing some of the fruit from our own vineyards. One of those vineyards is located just, it's on Rifle Range Road, so it's just on the boundary of Krondorf, the Krondorf sub-region itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have another vineyard down south, one way out north near Stockwell, township of Stockwell. So we have these four vineyards all located in different sub-regions, but our Rifle Range vineyard, or Kingship vineyard, is actually located just in the sub-region of Krondorf itself. And then we also work closely with a number of growers, high-end growers, that have a similar mindset into, you know, trying to grow the best quality fruit that they possibly can. For us, and those long-term relationships have proved super valuable in the sense that we have another key grower that has a number of vineyards in the Krondorf sub-region as well. But a lot of these key growers tend to be multi-generational growers, so they're you know, highly experienced. They know their art and their craft within the vineyard. And we're super reliant on those guys as well for their fruit.
Mm. And do you let them sort of do their thing and then, you know, produce the best fruit they can, or is there some sort of collaboration, and do you go and visit the site and you have some sort of input on canopy management and pruning and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, definitely. It's a two-way street. Obviously, we as winemakers are trying to achieve the best quality possible, particularly when it comes to Krondorf. And those guys want to do the best for the wine, for us, but they also need to make it sustainable. So if we're going down a journey of, you know, trying to structure a vineyard to produce quite low yields and have ultimately fruit that's very high in concentration and lots of depth and complexity in that final wine, then ultimately we need to be rewarding the grower and paying them well to do that. Yeah, and so it's very much a collaboration, and it's you know, a relationship that's been built on many years, and there's a lot of trust that comes with that.
So you'll classify the fruit at a higher grade, which comes with a higher purchase price.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense, totally.
Yeah, and we constantly, you know, once we've made the wine from a particular vintage, we'll engage the grower and show them the wine, and, you know, we'll talk through the wine and what we can do differently in the vineyard, if we need to do something differently, how we can change it up. So there's that constant sort of two-way collaboration.
So tell us about the release of these new wines. There's some stunning wines in there, and the icon wine is your King's Mantle Shiraz. So that's 2019,
yeah,
$150 bucks.
Yes. Yeah. So that's, I'll get to that one in a minute, but the release consists of five wines. So, within that range of five wines, we've got two brand new wines that we've released, and that is the Kingship Vineyard Cabernet Sauvignon, and then the King's Mantle, which is our icon wine, which is the one that you've just mentioned. So the one of the Shiraz wines is known as the Old Salem Shiraz. So the Old Salem and the Kingship are from fruit sourcing from our own vineyards. And then we have two wines called, they're both within the Stone Altar range. So it's a Stone Altar Grenache and the Stone Altar Shiraz. And so the sourcing from those is what we call old vine classification. So they're some of the older vines in the Barossa Valley. So the Shiraz comes from an individual vineyard site, and the Shiraz is 80 years of age, the vines that are growing the fruit. And then the Grenache is from two vineyard sites, one in the sub-region of Greenock, and one in the sub-region of Ebenezer. The Ebenezer parcel is from vines of 82 years of age, and then the Greenock parcel is from 50-year-old vines. So, the Stone Altar range is that old vine classification, and what we see with that is this lovely depth and concentration and really power of flavour. All those four wines are particularly from the 2021 vintage. And 2021, in my mind, was an absolutely stunning vintage, in the sense that we had good winter rains. We had a beautiful sort of topped up soil profile full of moisture as we entered into the growing season. And then ultimately we had really sort of nice sort of cool conditions and a long ripening period over that sort of January to March before picking. So it really set us up for having some great quality wines. So I think, you know, the 2021 vintage is going to be a standout as we look back in time. And then the King's Mantle, so the icon wine, we've sourced that fruit from the sub-region of Ebenezer, which is located in the far north of the Barossa Valley floor. And we're working with a fifth-generation grape grower And we've been working with that grower for a long time. We've sourced that particular fruit. We always could see that the wine was an absolute standout. We didn't have an actual brand or a vision for where that wine could go within Condors at the time. But we knew we had to keep it separate. So we packaged it separately and just held it in bins as a clean skin until we could work out, you know, where it could fit within the range. But ultimately, yeah, it's our first release for 2019, just released in May. And so it's got a bit of age on it already, but it's drinking wonderfully well now. And it's the sort of wine that will stand the test of time, in the sense that I look forward to opening a bottle of it, you know, in 10 years' time and just seeing how it's progressed.
So what's different? Obviously, you're recognised the quality of the fruit coming off the vineyard. What do you think Nick is setting it apart from perhaps some of the other areas?
Yeah, I think there's a number of things. Certainly the soil profile, you know, it's out at Ebenezer. There's this lovely, dark, sort of loamy, rich sort of soil. But interspersed in this particular patch of dirt is this little bits of ironstone. And I think that lends itself beautifully to the type of structure that we see in the wine and the tannin profile of the wine. It's very sort of graphite-like on the palate. And I think, you know, that ultimately is going to set it up for being long-lived. But it's quite a unique little patch of dirt that I think brings some very unique characteristics to the wine. And then ultimately in the way that we handle that particular parcel of fruit within the winery as well. So what we're doing is we're harvesting it, we're bringing it through, and ultimately we're crushing about 50% of the berries once they're destemmed, and then we're leaving about 50% of the berries intact, and then we're killing off that must. So we're taking it down to about 8 degrees, and we just let it sit there for about 24 to 36 hours, just a cold soak, and just leach out all that sort of vibrant colour, those vibrant colour compounds and the flavour precursors. And then ultimately we'll inoculate with some yeast and let it warm up slowly. And it's quite a cool ferment in the sense that we're trying to retain as much of the aromatics as we can. And we let it warm right up at the end just to try and get some sort of lovely extract out of the skins before we then press it off at dryness. Mm. So it's really about the vineyard itself, trying to capture the characteristics of the vineyard. And then just, I guess, trying to really sort of finesse and let the wine express itself through ferment, trying to retain as much of the character as we possibly can.
Mm. It's fascinating, isn't it, how you can just change your technique, you know, from vineyard to vineyard, really, depending on what fruit you're getting and, you know, and what you're getting is for so many different reasons. And as you just said, soil profile, it might be, you know, the microclimate of that particular vineyard, all those things. So it's kind
absolutely.
Of getting to know it, isn't it? And trialing a couple of things and kind of really working out what your strategy is going to be.
I think for myself, my philosophy is just minimalism at every step. So I think quite often the Barossa is blanketed with Barossa Shiraz, and people know Barossa Shiraz, but what they don't necessarily know is the diversity that we have within the Barossa when it comes to the different sub-regions of the Barossa and the different soil profiles, and as you mentioned, the different microclimates that come with those sort of little pockets and undulating hill lines and the like. And for me, the philosophy of minimalism lends itself to making wines that are expressive from those particular sites.
That makes sense. We've had another question about your Eden Valley Riesling. Is that widely available at retail, or is it more a sell it all or online thing?
Yeah, definitely. Our Eden Valley Riesling forms part of our single site series, so it's only available at Stellador at the moment, but you can order it online through the Stellador. So we make, well, all of our whites that we produce under the Krondorf brand are sourced from Eden Valley. Eden Valley is part of the greater Barossa region, but it lends itself to having higher altitude. And so while it's not super significant in its height as a region, it does experience cooler nights. And so we see better retention of acidity in the grape berries. And ultimately, it lends itself to growing better white varieties that are suitable for the Barossa region. So Riesling and Chardonnay are probably two key call-out white varieties that we source from Eden Valley. As we know, Eden is one of the key areas that has sort of shown through and through over many, many years that it can produce some great Riesling. But what we're doing is we're sourcing from a little area called High Eden within Eden Valley. So it's the highest altitude or the highest
point.
What sort of altitude would you
say it is?
That's that particular vineyard sits around 640 metres. And then, you know, you can, at the lower end of Eden Valley, you're looking at sort of around 480 metres. So quite a difference. But, yeah, the Chardonnay and the Riesling both come from that sort of sub-region of High Eden.
I'm really enjoying, you know, hearing about the brand and also seeing that it's coming to more prominence and coming out of hibernation in some way. It was probably not in hibernation, it was more that it was just not given the love, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And it deserves, you know, it with the history and all of the stories, you know?
It does, it truly does. It's been a long time coming, but it needed to happen. You know, it's like I said at the start of our talk, that it really did form, a great piece in what is the Barossa winemaking history, and to let it go wouldn't be the right thing to do. You know, we're just trying to bring that back. It's a story of authenticity. It's attached to a region that has provenance, and it's the brand that was loved and well known in the day, and there's no reason why it shouldn't be now.
And Krondorf means Crown Village, so it is in Crown Village. Is that, well, no, that. Krondorf, it's in, isn't it? So I'm sorry, I'm getting confused with the whole translation.
So the Silesian settlers named it Krondorf, meaning Crown Village.
Yep.
That's how it's come about.
Now, can we come and visit the Cellador, and that's in Tanunda.
That's right, yes, please do. It's a pretty amazing space in the sense that the Cellador is in the old flour mill, which also has some great history behind it in the main street of Tanunda in the Barossa. Mm-hmm. The guys there would love to showcase some of the wines to you and to your listeners. So please, everyone's welcome. It's a great experience. We also have, you know, lovely platters and pizzas to go with the wines. It's all sort of matched with the wine. Please come on down and have a look.
I reckon it's a must do just to re-engage with this brand. And so we can get the wines. Some of them obviously will be in retail, you know, Dan's and the like.
Exactly. And then those wines are typically also available in Cellador, but then Cellador does have some of the exclusive wines that, can't be that you can't purchase in retail.
Yeah, so, which is always a great reason to get there, because you just want to pick up those things that you can't find in your just your general retail. It's always some interesting stuff there.
Totally. Nick, thank you. And thanks for the chat and re-engaging us with Krondorf. So if people want to buy some of the wines that we've talked about, krondorfwines.com.au, and book a time at the Cellador when you're in Tanundra.
Absolutely.
Go and have a Carlton draft from the Tanundra pub as well, I suppose.
You might need one after you've had a few rounds. Yeah, cleansing.
Little cleanser. Yeah. All right, mate. Well, are you drinking Krondorf or Zed wines today?
Don't know.
Maybe
not
both.
Sure, yeah. Maybe both. Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for coming on. And
thanks, Nick.
I'd like to have another chat down the track. Because
that'd be great.
We want to get into the history as well a bit more. I mean, that is just anyone who wants to read up on it, of course, it's on the website. So krondorfwines.com.au, and it's amazing.
And all the families that have gone through the region, some of the great names there you'll recognise. So it's worthwhile having a look.
And is it Andrew Kaylard, Master of Wine, who does a little video piece on the website?
He does, So jump on the website, have a look. It's all pretty interesting, and you know the history. We could talk for hours about it. I do look forward to coming back at some stage and chatting more. But
we'll
likewise, I also look forward to seeing you guys in Cellador.
Yep, we'll do both.
Done deal.
All right, Nick. Thank you. Have a great afternoon, mate.
Excellent. Thanks guys. Bye.
Bye. Bye.